Welcome to Today with Dr. K. I'm Dr. K. Wise Whitehead here again for another year to have conversations with you that matter. Folks, are you as excited as I am to celebrate the first show for the new year for Today with Dr. K? We have made it. Justina and I were reminiscing earlier today, talking about the fact that the show has been on for 3 years, and we are still going strong because of you and because of your support. I ended my last show of last year by saying thank you to you for all of your financial support, your emotional support, your physical support, your spiritual support. Every single thing we have stepped out to do, we have done it, and we have done it together. So thank you. I'm excited about what 2020 has in store for you and for me. I begin this morning at 6:28, and I like to write these things called Red Nana Drops, and it's named after my two grandmothers. My dad's mother, they used to call her Red because she had blazing auburn red hair, and then my mom's mother, we called her Nana. So Red Nana Drops, and I thought it'd be appropriate to begin our first show of the new year by just reading what I wrote at 6:58 this morning. Alarm goes off. Heart start beating quickly. It's that moment again. For work and school and pressure and bills and deadlines and. But just wait. Just stop. Just breathe. Slowly, deeply. You made it. It is 2020 and you are still here. A little older, a little better, a little wiser. 2019 was a rough year, but you beat it and you learned. You will tame 2022. Open your eyes slowly. You got this. Take the mountain today. Find your best self today. Live your wildest dreams today. Step off into faith today. You are still here. A miracle is waiting to happen in you and through you and for you. So stand up. Take it all in. Deep stretch. One final yawn. Now run and meet the person you're going to meet and be this year. I started off my morning with that. I said, I'm excited for who I'm going to become in 2020. I'm excited for the dreams that I have for myself and for my show and for my beloved adopted city of Baltimore. I have so much I want to accomplish, and I have so much I want to accomplish with you. And so I'm asking you now, here on January 2nd, 2020, to make the commitment with me, to commit to doing everything you can to start where you are with the tools and the gifts that you have and make the place where you stand better. I am not asking you to commit to changing the world. I'm not. We don't need any more martyrs. Let's be very clear. We don't need any more Dr. Kings where everything rests on one person's shoulder. We don't need any more Gandhis. We don't need that. We need individuals to make the commitment to start where they are with the tools and the talents that they have to make the ground where you are standing better. Can you imagine a Baltimore City where every resident makes the commitment to just start where they are and make the ground where they are standing better? Last year, 2019, was a rough one. It was a rough one for Baltimore City. And I've been thinking a lot about my beloved adopted city, going into New Year's Eve, coming out on the other side. I had a moment at 12:01 a.m. on January 1st. Now, I will say, going into that, we made a decision to stay home this year for New Year's Eve. And I wanted to teach my family black spades. Now, if you have played spades before and you are not a person of color, you are playing spades very differently than black folks play. I play black spades. Very different. It's hard. It's fast. I mean, people get attitudes. People started Googling up the black family spades rules, which doesn't exist. But it 12:01 a.m. after the countdown, in my community here in Baltimore City, I heard what was either fireworks or gunshots. You know, it's Baltimore City. People are firing off. At one point, it sounded like they were firing machine guns. It frightened me so much. I wanted to actually move to the floor because I was concerned. I said, you know, here in Baltimore City probably should be a place that we ban fireworks. I'm thinking of all the PTSD and the CTSD, post-traumatic stress disorder, and the continual traumatic stress disorder that we're dealing with here in Baltimore City. Maybe we need to move to a place that we have healed people, that we're trauma-free before we start setting off fireworks and shooting off guns. I'm sure folks were shooting off guns on New Year's Eve because that seems to be part of, like, the Baltimore way. I was thinking about what we can do differently. I'm thinking about all the families who lost loved ones in 2019. I'm thinking about all the families who had loved ones shot, non-fatal shootings, in 2019. I'm just trying to figure out what we can do as a city differently in 2020 so we can have different results going into 2021. Between Baltimore City and the rest of the world, there's always a hint of an unasked and therefore unanswered question. Now, it is a question that is rooted in anti-blackness, and it's framed by years of deliberate black oppression and suppression. It is a question that is difficult to ask of a city that seems to move from one scandal to the next without pausing for a moment to catch its collective breath. Outsiders look at us with a wary eye. They have their head cocked. They have that question ready on their lips. I encountered it when I went home and visited my family. They are not sure, though, of how to frame the question that we're going to wrestle with today. They don't know how to ask us this question without making us angry. They do not seem to understand that the very same question that they are afraid to ask is the same one that we ask of both our politicians and ourselves all of the time. The question that I want to wrestle with today, the question I want to put on the table, the question I want you to think about, the question that outsiders have for us that they're afraid to ask is very simple. Is Baltimore City broken beyond repair? That's what I'm wondering. Is Baltimore City, our beloved city, for some of us, our beloved adopted city, for some of you, your childhood home, a place where you came of age, is Baltimore City broken beyond repair? We are a city full of dreamers, and I would argue that we deserve to be seen and treated better. I was watching the news today, and every politician who's running for mayor, all of them came out today to blast against the violence from last year. All of them. I mean, it felt like some type of show where they showed every single politician, every mayoral candidate, saying the violence is a problem. I have a plan for the violence. Why isn't the mayor doing more? We should be doing that. I have this amazing situation that could come across to save this city. And I kept asking myself, and I kept screaming at the television, if you have a plan to decrease the violence in Baltimore City, if you have a plan to save Baltimore City, if you have a plan to heal the hurt in Baltimore City, then my goodness, why haven't you done it yet? Why haven't you implemented the plan yet? Why haven't you put forth the plan yet? I say that because I understand that here in Baltimore City, you don't have to be an elected official to bring about change. You don't. Ask Erica Bridgeford from Baltimore Ceasefire. You don't have to be elected to look to heal this city. You don't. Ask Tawana Jones from West Wednesdays because of her brother Tyrone West. You don't have to be a celebrity to change the direction of this city. You don't. Ask Tyree Colleone of No Shoot Zone. Ask Adam Jackson and Davon Love and Lawrence Grand Prix from Leaders of a Beautiful Struggle. Ask them. You don't have to have a $1 million budget and have the whole city at your disposal and have the world at your fingertips to bring about change. You don't. Ask Reverend Heber Brown and the network he's doing with black churches and black food security. You actually can start where you are with a love for this city, with a desire to make this city better, with the wherewithal to keep going even when they knock you down, and you can make a change. When I say, is Baltimore City broken beyond repair, I'm under the belief that those who are running for office want us to think that. They want us to think, hey, you know, this city's broken, almost beyond repair. And so my $1 million plan that I'm going to put into place as soon as I get elected to mayor, it can happen. See, here's the thing, folks. If you love this city, okay, I'm going to put it out there. If you really love this city, you don't have to wait to be elected mayor to change it. You don't. You actually don't have to be the mayor to change it. You can say, I've got this plan to change Baltimore City, so I'm going to get out here with Erica Bridgeford and Baltimore Ceasefire, and I'm going to burn sage and try to heal these spaces. I'm going to say, I'm going to get out here with Daphne Austin and the Mothers Against Murdered Sons and Daughters, and I'm going to hug them and hold their hands and stand with them when they say the names of the victims. I'm going to get out here and do the work that needs to be done, even if you don't elect me. Because, see, that's my concern. So we have 14 candidates, 14 different plans, 14 different people. So if you don't get elected, do we not get the benefit of your plan? Like that $1 million plan that's going to save our city. If you don't get elected, you're going to what, pack up your toys and go home? Because Dr. King never served in any office. He wasn't president. He wasn't a kingmaker. He wasn't a mayor. He wasn't. Dorothy Eyhite helped to found the National Council of Negro Women. She wasn't elected for any office. She served as president of Delta Sigma Theta Sorority Incorporated. But she didn't go down to sit on the Senate floor in Washington, D.C. Ida B. Wells, she wasn't elected. Nobody was funding her to go and cover lynchings, but she did. If you have a plan to repair our broken city, if you have a plan to heal the hurt that's in this city, if you have a plan so we don't end up with 348 homicides by the end of 2020, then my goodness, why don't you put it in place? See, that's where I started today off. I said, you know what? I am no longer accepting that I have to wait for you to get elected before we can have change. I'm not accepting that. I was so angry today as they, you know, talked about the last murder of 2019 and the first murder of 2020. Folks, it felt like some type of game show. And we got these murders. Let's talk about them. And then every candidate expressed anger, disgust, frustration, and a new plan, a new vision. Here's what I want to throw out there, because I know it's just a few of us listening. How about the fact that of the candidates that are running, many of them are already in office, which means their $1 million plan could be happening right now. Wouldn't it be amazing if people said, you know what, I'm going to focus on trying to heal this city, whether you elect me or not. I'm going to focus on trying to change this city, whether you vote for me or not. I'm going to start where I am with the talents that I have, with the gifts that I have, and I'm going to make the ground where I am standing better. 410-319-8888. This is Today with Dr. K. We just decided this year to start off our first show by just doing kind of a weekly wrap. We're like, you know what? We just need to talk to people. You can call and you can put things on the table. I'm asking the question, is Baltimore City broken beyond repair? Maybe you want to ask the question, is a Democratic candidate field broken beyond repair? Folks, we started off with 1,001 candidates, right? We had black folks on the stage. We had Hispanics on the stage. We had Asian Americans on the stage. I mean, it was just as diverse as it could be. And we had 20-something candidates. And then one by one, they've gone. Kamala Harris, black woman, she's out of it. Julian Castro, Latino man, he stepped down today. Andrew Yang, I'm not sure what he's doing. I'm assuming that he's out of it. I mean, we have whittled the field down to where the field is all white. Those are the remaining six candidates. And out of all the white folks who are running, all but two are women. And all but one is a millionaire or billionaire. They are about as disconnected from pro-black folks as you can think. I mean, let's be very, very clear. I don't think a white man billionaire is going to understand my pain at all. I don't think some white woman millionaire is going to understand people having to choose between paying rent and, you know, getting food in your kitchen. But that's what we believe. Apparently, we say we want diversity in America, and diversity ends up looking like white people. That is a harsh reality, but it's true. You say you want diversity, diversity ends up looking like white people, because who are the final candidates? And what do they have in common? Yeah, outside their bank account, and I'll take Pete Buttigieg out of it, but Pete Buttigieg does come from a family with money, let's be clear. But they all have a lot of money, and they're all people who are not of color. How about a third thing you might want to put on the table? 2020 movies are set to be so black. Like, this might be the year where black folks are going to dominate Hollywood, although I bet they don't get the recognition, but that's fine. We can talk about the movies that are coming up. We can talk about what is next for you. What are your plans for starting where you are with the talent and tools that you have to make the ground where you're standing better? Do you know who you are? I mean, maybe that's your challenge for 2020, figuring out who you are and who you want to be this year. Do you agree that we're all caught, like Dr. King said? He said we're caught in this inescapable network of mutuality, right? Where your dreams are tied into my dreams and my successes are tied to your successes. That he was talking about Baltimore. Now, he projected it to America writ large, but isn't that Baltimore? Aren't your successes tied to the successes of Leaders of a Beautiful Struggle? And if Baltimore ceasefire wins, don't you win? And if the Black Food Security Network, if they're able to feed their community, doesn't that mean that's going to impact your community being fed? That we're all caught up here in this network of inescapable mutuality where our dreams and our hopes and our fears and our desires are all tied into one another and all linked together. So we're going to call this our weekly wrap here on a Thursday as we begin with our first show for the new year, because we're going to do something different this year. Justine and I have decided that we're going to go even a little bit farther. We already do the work where we come out of the studio and engage with the community. That's the Itty Bitty Fan Club. That's the Teen Summit. We're going to do more of that this year. You know why? Because change doesn't get made simply in this room. Change gets made when we take this radio show to the people, out to the streets. 410-319-8888. We have Cynthia on the phone. Cynthia from East Baltimore. How are you?
Fine. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you as well.
I would say Baltimore is not broken beyond repair. When you talk about strategies, there are strategies that are citywide, and then there are strategies that are, to me, neighborhood specific. And I think if we're going to start addressing issues, we have to start addressing them at the basic level, which to me is the neighborhood. Mm. If you do that, then I think neighborhoods can come together and learn from each other. My neighborhood has seen a decrease in the last 2 years of crime overall. So we're not experiencing the shooting and the murders that other parts of Baltimore are experiencing at this time, but we have. And if neighborhoods got together to share some of the strategies that they put in place to change the dynamic within their specific local community and not citywide, I think that would have some, that would create an opportunity for people to see how different strategies right. can really impact different neighborhoods, because everything is not one for one, right? The same thing you do in East Baltimore, you may not be able to do in West Baltimore, because there may be some capacity issues. There may be other issues that are addressed, need to be addressed. So I think you can look at things citywide, mm-hmm. but I also think we need to look at things neighborhood-wide, and we need to put more time and funding at the neighborhood level to build those capacities of those individuals that live there and can address those issues, and then we may see some changes.
So just so I can be clear, because we know that there are two different approaches. If you're going citywide to community, that's kind of the top-down approach. But community up to citywide, that is kind of the, you know, the trickle-up approach. So you want to trickle up, go from the communities, and then have it go up to the citywide level.
Correct. And I don't like the word community. I really like the word neighborhood.
Okay.
Because if you talk about residents and folk who live there, they know who actually is, what's going on, who's doing what. Community can mean people who just come in for business or do different things like that. But if you really start addressing those resident-specific organizations that have some capacity issues that really can give you the intelligence that you need, I think we could see a lot more progress.
I like that. Thank you so much, Cynthia. I appreciate you. Folks, I was listening to Cory Booker earlier today when I was driving in my car, and he gave this quote that I want to kind of shift a little bit for Baltimore City. He was talking about Washington, but I want to switch it to where it applies to Baltimore. So he was saying, change does not come from City Hall. So change doesn't come from the mayor, change doesn't come from the police commissioner, change doesn't come from the school superintendent. Change does not come from City Hall. Change goes to City Hall. In other words, if we want to change this city, if we want to change our schools, we do the work to bring the change about. We put the pressure on them because they're not going to give us change, folks. We got to force them to change. This is Today with Dr. K. I'm Dr. K. Wise Whitehead. I'm so excited here about 2020. We have James and Lolly standing by, and I always have a line for you, so keep it here. Welcome back to Today with Dr. K. I'm Dr. K. Wise Whitehead, here again to talk with you about Baltimore City, about the world, about who you are and who you want to be. This is our first show for the new year. Folks, I want to throw something out before I open up the phones. You know that we live in the richest state, one of the richest states, if not the richest state in the country. But within Baltimore City, a predominantly black city, white residents make almost twice as much money as black residents. Hear me out here. Unemployment rates for young black men are three times higher than for young white men. Three times higher. And 61% of black children in Baltimore City live in low-income households that have two times the level of child poverty rates. Just let that sit with you just for a second. More black men in this city are unemployed, three times as likely to be unemployed. Here's a city that's 68% African American. Black children live in homes, low-income neighborhoods. They have two times the poverty level. That means they're not just impoverished. They are doubly impoverished. They have a deeper hole that they're living in. They have to climb out of that hole to get to poverty and then climb out of that hole to get into what we call just low-income status. I just want you to think about what that means. And I'll use the hole analogy so you can see how deep down our children are. It's two holes down where black children are in this city. 61% of our black children in Baltimore City live at two times the lower level of poverty. Black Baltimore is struggling. And I make the argument, and you may not agree, that there are at least two Baltimores. Now, some people would like to argue that there are more. Okay. But can we agree that there are at least two Baltimores? Like, there is a black Baltimore that is struggling, that is dealing with poverty, that's dealing with the impact of mass incarceration, that's dealing with the impact of lead poisoning, that's dealing with the impact of all the pollution in the air from the factories. That's one Baltimore. That's a black Baltimore. Then there's a white Baltimore. I mean, I'm talking Roland Park. I'm talking Hamden. You know, I'm talking Mount Washington. And then they're living a different life. Fells Point, Federal Hill, they're living in a different world. than Sandtown Winchester. To be clear, and let me just go ahead and make it plain for you, life expectancy within Black Baltimore, like Upton and Druid Heights, where the median income is about $13,388 a year. Yes, folks. In Upton and Druid Heights, the median income is $13,388 a year. The poverty level is around $27,000. So you're at half of what is called the poverty level in this country, in this city. The life expectancy in Upton and Druid Heights and in Black neighborhoods in Baltimore City, it's only 63 years old. That's it. Your life expectancy is about 63 years old. If you just go 5 miles over to Roland Park, just 5 miles over, your life expectancy increases from 63 up to 86. A 5 mile difference, folks. In Upton and Druid Heights, in Sandtown Winchester, residents have a 3 times higher rate of dying from heart disease, an 8 times higher rate of dying from diabetes, a 15 times higher rate of dying from homicide, and a 20 times higher rate of dying from HIV than in just Roland Park, which is a predominantly white neighborhood. If you're living in Roland Park, you 5 miles have made a difference between you living and you dying. And in living where you can enjoy the ride versus living where you're struggling. The median income in Roland Park is about $90,492. I want you to think about the 5 mile difference. 5 miles separate these two neighborhoods. One is coming at a median income of $13,000. The other's at a median income of $90,000. Two Baltimores, separate and unequal. So when I ask the question, is Baltimore City broken beyond repair? Maybe I'm just talking about Black Baltimore. Maybe so. This is the Weekly Wrap, so we want to put a whole lot of stories on the table and have you just talk about them. One thing that caught my attention that my son came and pointed out to me was an incident taking place on social media. So my sons are all on Instagram and all these things. And on Instagram, there was a post about Mervo. And the Instagram page was titled, Shoot Up Mervo on Thursday. And so it was a big concern. And young people were sharing it and tagging it, and it was stopped. This was something that was stopped before it happened. And I wanted to have Sergeant Clyde Boatwright on just to talk to us about the ways in which people, you know, going into 2020, can really use social media, can use that as a way to try to, when they hear something or see something, to say something so that the police officers, and in this case, the school resource officers, could move on it. Sergeant Boatwright, how are you?
Good afternoon, Dr. T. Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. This case, when we saw it, and I saw it on social media, and I've been following it, and I'm very, very happy that it was able to be stopped. Can you just kind of talk us through it and talk about how this attempt was thwarted?
Well, the social media post went up on one of the local websites, and whether it was Twitter or Instagram or Facebook, the way I became aware of it was through Facebook. And I will say the big network of Baltimore, you know, people say that there's no trust in the police, and I don't get that because I can't tell you how many times people inbox me the post and say, look, I don't know if you're aware of this. And even one guy, it was funny, Dr. K, he said, look, you and I don't agree with everything regarding social media, but I think you need to know about this.
Good.
And I said thank you. So, you know, the social media post was forwarded to the proper department within our organization, within school police, and to our administrators, to our chief, and others. And you know, the ball started rolling, and this is again, this is, you know, 1 a.m. You know, everyone's social media is going off and we're getting these repeated messages and things like that. So we started off our phone conversations and you know, made sure that everybody that needed to know knew about that, including school administrators. And then our partners from BPD got involved, and our federal partners got involved, and school police, along with city police, and the federal authorities, were able to create a profile of the person, and then subsequently go and interview, and then make a arrest in reference to this.
Mm. And so the school, in terms of the response, because I know that this, for a lot of people, a lot of students who at first thought it was a joke, but then got very concerned, what procedures are in place going forward? Because we want to make sure that 2020 is a year where our babies are safe in their schools.
Well, you know, one of the concerns, you know, I had to take off, you know, my union hat and worry about school safety first. And so that was one of the main things that we did. I'm still a police officer first, so we had to worry about the safety of the students. But then I had to realize, you know, in the posting, there were posts, the posts contained automatic firearms, automatic weapons. And I still had to, and then I had to put back on my union hat and think about the unarmed police officer that I have in that building that I represent. So the protocol moving forward and regarding this incident was the administrators had their own component, the police had their component, and us as the union, we had our component to make sure that we had the proper resources available for our members and those who could be affected by this.
All right. Thank you so much. So, Sergeant Clyde Boatwright, this was all done. Students are safe today in schools. And I just wanted to say, because we often point out when police officers and SROs are not doing something that we like, and when they're not living up to what we want, we also want to give just as much time and attention when something like this happened and it potentially saved lives. And so we appreciate you.
No, and we thank you. You know, we had plenty of police officers there today, and I'm quite sure that will remain in the coming days. Because there is an act, and then sometimes there are copycats out there. So, you know, we'll remain vigilant. And I encourage all of your listeners, if they see something that looks a little bit suspicious, let us check it out. Just give us the information. Information is good, and we'll follow it wherever it leads us.
I appreciate that. Sergeant Clyde Boatwright, folks, is a police sergeant at Baltimore City Schools. He's the Maryland FOP vice president, and he's a frequent guest on our show. So thank you so much, Sergeant Clyde Boatwright.
Thank you. Thank you again, Dr. K.
Absolutely. So, folks, we're doing a weekly wrap where we're opening it up. I mean, I have a question on the table that you don't have to wrestle with, but it's what I'm wrestling with. It's Baltimore City. And apparently, given the statistics I just shared, we're talking about Black Baltimore. Is it broken beyond repair? My first caller said maybe we need to focus on the neighborhoods and kind of have the change bubble up. Because Cory Booker gave a great quote, you know, that change doesn't come from City Hall. Change goes to City Hall. If we want to change Baltimore, folks, it's got to be on us. 410-319-8888. James is on the phone from Pimlico. James, how are you?
Dr. K, how you doing? Blessings for the work you're doing.
Thank you so much, sir.
I got too much to say and a little time to say it, so I'm going to try to give you a piece, a little bit of each.
Okay.
First thing, piggybacking on what the sister said about the neighborhoods, she was definitely correct about that. In order to get a big moment, you got to start with little steps. Each one of these neighborhoods got somebody that they respect. Every neighborhood got somebody in that neighborhood that they respect. And that person, if we can round up each and every respected person from every neighborhood and bring them to the table, they can rally and get groups of people out of each neighborhood to clean their neighborhood up, first and foremost. That's just one point. Second point, how are you going to be the interim mayor and you refusing to go to all the town hall meetings? You don't have enough patience to listen to what the people got to say? So how are you going to be reelected? That's like two.
No, I understand that. That's two. I'm going to put that right there. You're right. Go ahead.
Yeah. Now the police department, their famous slogan is say something, see something, say something. But will they do that for their own comrades? Question mark.
Yes,
cricket.
A question mark, yes. I mean, I'm going to put that down because the question is, now you're talking now about going to a different level, of actually saying, I am getting ready to be that person to speak up when I see wrong things happening,
and
even
that's
in
correct.
City Hall.
I agree with you on that point.
Come on. I'm with that. Somebody's got to say something.
Yeah. But on the other hand, will those officers do that for their comrades
yes.
who they know that's corrupt?
Yep. Who's going to do it? I like you, James. I appreciate you. Folks, James is just kind of putting it out here. We know. Now, last year was last year, right? We know that last year there was a town hall and 300-plus residents showed up in the cold, took off work, caught two buses coming because they wanted to hear from the candidates for mayor. We know Brandon Scott, city council president, Jack Young, mayor, did not come. We know that. That was last year. I am certain that they're going to be there this year because we want to hear from the people who want to run this city. But I want to just remind you, I'm going to keep saying it over and over again. If you've got this plan to save Baltimore, if you got this plan to heal the broken places in our heart, do the plan now. We don't have time to wait until you get elected. Do it now. If you do it now, we'll see it. If you're doing the plan now, believe me, XYZ candidate, we will see it. The papers will pick it up. I mean, yesterday when I went to that protest led by Tawanda Jones from West Wednesdays, we were speaking out about the gag order bill, and we were reading impact statements from families. I read, Erica Bridgeford read, Brandon Scott was there. We were reading statements from families who've been affected by police brutality who were afraid to speak up. The work that Tawanda Jones has been doing for, I believe, if I'm not mistaken, she's like 345 Wednesdays. Now, you may not agree with what she's standing for, but 345 Wednesdays is a lot of standing and protesting. She's not mayor, so you can start where you are. I'm not saying go support West Wednesdays, though maybe you should think about it. I'm not saying go support Baltimore Ceasefire. Maybe you should think about it. I'm saying if you got a plan to heal Baltimore, let's not wait until you get elected. Do it now. That's the only thing I would say to every candidate. If I had an opportunity to talk to any candidate, my question would be, why aren't you doing this plan now? Don't you think Baltimore is suffering enough? We shouldn't have to wait till after the election. Let's do it now. Lolly from Woodlawn, how are you?
You doing, Dr. K?
I'm doing well, thank you.
Like I said, I would actually echo the last two callers, but I'm calling just to, like what you said, just to show my appreciation for my family, because that was actually my cousin that you had read yesterday.
Was it?
So
yes.
I just wanted to say thank you for your, you know, your time, your energy, and like you said, showing teamwork. Like, you could have stayed home and did anything under the, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like most people after New Year's stayed home, kicked back. But no, Dr. K came down there, took her time out, and played, you know what I mean, played team ball. And like I said, we are very appreciative, and I just wanted to call and, you know, thank you for that.
Thank you, Lolly. I appreciate it. It was my honor and my privilege to do so. Thank you.
Thank you.
Oh, folks, this was yesterday. It was a powerful day. And really, something Lolly said, it wasn't even about me. It was just, I know I can speak up. Who can speak for those who can't speak? See, that's the question. And you know, if you are a religious person, that's something that Christ was saying. If you follow Gandhi, Gandhi said. If you are a king follower, he said. If you like Ida B. Wells, she said. If you like Dorothy I. Hyde, she said. If you like Frances Ellen Watkins Harper, black woman born here in Baltimore City during the 19th century who wrote poetry, she said the same thing. And I'm paraphrasing. Who speaks for those who are either unable to, who are even frightened, who even, you know, cannot do it, can't even articulate how they're feeling? Who speaks for them? You know what, folks? We do. You do, and I do. And you don't have to be mayor to speak for those who can't speak for themselves. We have Clarence on the phone from Baltimore. Clarence, how are you?
I'm fine, Dr. K. I got to push back on Mr. Booker a little bit here.
Okay.
Mr. Booker is no fool, okay? Mm-hmm. That's number one. He knows what he's saying. Now, change doesn't come from City Hall. It goes to City Hall. Well, economic and educational deprivation comes from City Hall. Okay, blight comes from City Hall, from the business community that is allowed to do it by City Hall, okay? So when you look at the things, the conditions that the crime that we're talking about in Baltimore City, mm-hmm. and the conditions of Baltimore City, those are conditions that have been allowed to happen by City Hall. So, you know, to me, when I hear statements like that, I'm like, okay, who is he trying to fool? Okay, people on the ground, the people that live under these conditions did not make these conditions. These conditions were some, in a sense, forced upon them. Mm-hmm. So, and in response to Sergeant Boatwright, when he's talking about people don't have trust in the police, okay, I can go right now and go to places in Baltimore City where it'll be 10 or 15 people standing on a corner selling drugs, and the police will be less than 100 meters away from them watching them. So how much faith am I supposed to have?
Right.
Thanks, Dr. Gay.
No, don't hang up, Clarence. I want to say this because I think I need to give a little bit of clarity, though. For the Cory Booker comment, Clarence, Cory Booker did not say City Hall. I was paraphrasing Cory Booker. What Cory Booker said, change does not come from Washington. Change goes to Washington. Cory Booker was doing a panel talking about justice, and he was talking about the civil rights movement and how every time there was change, whether it was women getting the right to vote, it wasn't coming from Washington. It came from individuals forcing Washington to change. Whether it was ending and breaking the back of Jim Crow, it didn't come from Washington. It was individuals pressuring Washington to change. So I had said I was paraphrasing. I took that to change it for Baltimore City. Change doesn't come from City Hall. Change goes to City Hall. So I just want to make a note. Cory Booker was not talking about Baltimore. I paraphrased him, and I did say at the top I was paraphrasing him. Sorry for the if there was any people are not clear about what he said. All right, Vanessa from Northeast Baltimore, how are you?
Fine, thank you.
Thank you for calling.
Yeah, I'm listening, and haven't listened in for quite a while. And I just want to say I like what the person said about going to the neighborhood. And I know, personally, we have to go a step deep. We need to go in the home. Mm. You know, a group of homes make a neighborhood or businesses and all of that stuff, but we have to go in the home. If I am teaching my kid, I don't care if the books are old, read them to your kids. When your kids have a love of things, when they don't know anything else about the world because they just got here. If we're putting good stuff in, some good stuff will come out. Mm-hmm. Now, when they get out into society and it's tainted because of where they live with all of the bad things, hell, we got a lot of stuff going on out there. You know, teach our kids right or wrong. And when they go, when they veer in the wrong direction, it's our job as parents to steer them back in the right direction. When they're determined to go in the wrong direction, we have to reach out for help. Now, and we can start in our community. We start in our home, you know, your brothers and sisters, you know, check on your sister, check on your brother. We just need to go deep because the change is going to come from within ourselves.
Right.
We need to, their first 5 seconds of fame should come from within the home, not social media, not anywhere else. It needs to come from there. When our kids go out the door believing that they are somebody special, it doesn't matter the belt, it doesn't matter the clothes, they know that they are somebody. And it gives them the notion, out of mouths of babes, they say things and they do things echoing what they've heard. All of their learning is what they've seen and heard. We need to check what we're doing in our homes. And when it's really hard, when our kid has gone off in the wrong direction, it's hard for a parent to pick up the phone and say, you know what, I need to call the police on you because you're going to go out and hurt somebody else. And until we do that, we cannot expect the mayor, the governor, D.C., anybody else to do a thing that will help us. We have to start out feeling, knowing we are somebody, and that starts in our home. I don't care if you have one baby. I don't care if you have five babies or five baby daddies or whatever the case may be. You need to check what you're doing and who you're associating with, and you need to make sure you're putting the good stuff in.
I like that. Thank you so much. I appreciate you, Vanessa.
Sure.
Just loves, you know, but sometimes you just have to let people get it out because people are listening. I also want to say, hey, welcome back to the show, Vanessa. I know you haven't listened for a while. We are still here and we're still working to bring the news to the community. We have Brandon on the phone from West Baltimore. Brandon, how are you?
Okay, Happy New Year to everyone in Radio Land as well.
Happy New Year to you.
All right, so I wanted to answer those questions that you asked. Yes. One was, is Baltimore beyond broken? Not at all. Not at all. The second one, I think you've asked more so in the sub-question, is it the Democratic Party that's broken?
Yeah.
Absolutely. And the third one that you asked is, I vaguely remember, I'm sorry, but those two I'll go with, just okay. Not to take up time. So when we're speaking specifically about the city not being broken per se, you still have people, grassroots activists, servants, people of different backgrounds who are actively engaged, who are not concerning themselves with what's going on, particularly inside of the electoral cycle. Because when we speak about poor and working class black folks, if anyone had 10,000, 20,000, 50,000, or 100,000 to be able to run an electoral campaign,
right. They
probably use that towards a fight back program, to be able to feed the people, to be able to clothe, to be able to provide housing, and any kind of fight back program that created the blight and the decadent situation that we find ourselves. It's just ironic that we have so many people who have the solutions without the political will to answer the questions on, well, if you have access to these resources, where's your economic development plan? Where's your opportunity or your programs to be able to address police abuses, police brutality, and the corruption in the city without getting into an electoral seat? To me, I look at it as, well, hey, it seems like political gamesmanship, but more importantly, it comes in the form of political masturbation.
Right.
When someone says, look at my leadership skills, look at the way I speak, look at my class status and interests, put me in office, and you'll see different compared to what you had 20 years ago.
Well, let me ask you this, Brandon, because when we talk about, you know, it's Black Baltimore, because I was really specifically talking about, is Black Baltimore broken beyond repair? Is there a sense that the problems and the issues that we're dealing with, and I'm talking about all of it, from the poverty to the lead paint to the crime, that there's this hole that we're in that none of our politicians seem to have an effective plan to get us out of the hole?
In that respect, it would seem like it, but from the way you can look at those broken pieces, I can understand if one person will feel compelled to say is yes, it's broken, but depends on one's view and one's perception. Where, again, if we're talking about how many Baltimores there are, there's three Baltimores. There's one with the black misleadership class, there's one downtown that has an overdevelopment, and there's one uptown that is underdevelopment.
Okay.
Where to the point that if the question is about squeegee boys, the lead paint, and how do we have fight back economic development and something that is sustainable with wraparound services and answers to commitment, then we're wondering, well, hey, why is it that our TIF dollars are being taken away from businesses like Target that leave by night that can go towards the community and provide some resources towards the youth that can build up homes and go to school and trade and hopefully live in there while paying into the tax pool? It depends on how you view those broken pieces, just like a puzzle. What do you address first, and how do you strategically do that without having to capitulate to any establishment rules or ideas?
And that's the question. I don't even know. I mean, I'm seriously feeling like we're in this box here, and that everywhere we turn, it's another policy, but the policy is not proving to be effective. Like, I'm just so tired of the hot air is what I'm tired of.
Absolutely.
I'm tired of the hot air. I'm tired of always hearing about these amazing plans that happen if you elect me, and then we elect you, and the amazing plan doesn't happen.
Absolutely. When it's a lot, again, you've said it yourself, and a lot of the listeners have voiced it. When there isn't a political will to fight on behalf of the poor or to champion the poor and working class folks who are the ones who pay the majority into the tax pool, we're not talking about dollars per se. We're talking about community-wise resources as an aggregate number.
Right.
These are people who still pay taxes. When they're ignored and left out, we find ourselves working towards those who are at the top in higher percentages who can contribute from their business acumen, but nonetheless, they still leave out the bottom that is continuously falling out and eliminating middle-class services as well as those who wish to become a part of society and wants to contribute as well.
Right, I appreciate you. Thank you so much, Brandon. We have Travis on the phone from Mount Vernon. Travis, how are you?
Happy New Year, Dr. K.
Happy New Year, everyone.
And I'm doing wonderful. I just need my 90 minutes to get everything I want to say out. We have a lot of opportunists and attention seekers in this city who don't really care about this city. They only care about their come up. You know, why do we have 16 people campaigning for mayor? That's my question. A lot of these people just want a job. because they know that they could do next to nothing and still get their salary every 2 weeks and their benefits. We must do for us, we must do for ourselves, and we must do for our community. We must buy up our community, both commercial and residential commercial properties, and create opportunities for our people and our community. I believe that's what Kwanzaa is all about.
Right.
To celebrate Kwanzaa. But that's what Kwanzaa is all about, and that's what Elijah Muhammad wrote that we must do for ourselves. A 25 signature petition is what changes things in the city of Baltimore and in the state of Maryland. Not talk, not being an opportunist, not being a attention seeker, but a 25,000 petition, a signature petition, can change anything in the city charter. And lastly, of course, a police union president, a black man, will ask a dumb, stupid, ignorant question. People don't trust the police because many are crooked. Oh, let's think. Tyrone West, Abdul Salam, Keith Davis Jr., and the Gun Task Force.
All right, I got to stop you there. Thank you so much, Travis. Folks, we're going to hold it here for just a minute. When we come back, we're actually going to pick up on this conversation. I got Tiana Holden, Natanya William, a new caller from Fort Bragg, and I got a line for you, 410-319-8888. Give a call and start your new year off by talking right here with me on Today with Dr. K. Stay with us.
Good afternoon. Taking a look at the MARC trains on the MTA systems. We do have on the Camden Line 848 and 853, both operating with 5 to 10 minute delays. The the Penn and Brunswick lines are on schedule. Light Rail Link does have a 10 to 15 minute delay, and Metro Subway Link on time. On the Local Link buses, Purple Line eastbound diverting at Madison and Wolf, Orange and Blue lines westbound diverting at Franklin and Fulton. For the MTA Transit Team, I'm Kurt Kronke on 88.9 FM, WEAA, the voice of the community.